So, good evening, everyone. Yesterday we had a day of practice, and I gave a Dharma talk. And so I feel a bit like, what is there to say? And yet there's always something to say. Also, a sense of when anyone speaks, it's always a limited point of view. Even though when I speak, I try to widen and follow the Zen path, which is not to have a certain angle, but to include all angles, right? The angle that includes all angles or something. But still, when it's my voice, it's always the same person talking. So always a certain way of speaking, a certain perspective, certain approach. And I accept that that's my role here, and that it's important that I honor that. At the same time, to be honest, I have resistance to it too. So, and I have this impression, like, so as I've said before, from this apartment we're in Lisbon, I can see up to high on the hill, two very high viewpoints, and it's very mysterious to me. So I've gone to see them, to see, because I can see them so well from here, very high, and they seem so far away. And actually, they're only like 15 minutes walk, but it's up very steep. So as I said last week, I've gone to see them. And on the highest one, it really is a spectacular view over the city. Part of the city, right? You can't see what you can't see. And you can see what you can see, and you can't see what you can't see from there. And from my window here, I can very clearly see. I can even see tiny little people moving up there, but when I'm up there, I can't figure out which is my building and my window. So I thought, well, maybe I should hang something outside the window, something distinctive. And so when I go up there, I'll be able to see which window it is. And then I was thinking that why does it matter if I can see this window, actually, this building we're in? I'm sure that I can see it from up there because I can see it so clearly from here. Someone a long, long time ago told me. So, from my house where I live in Paris, and I live right next door to the Zen Center, so, we share a garden wall, so I can see into their garden from my upstairs window. And from their upstairs windows, they can see into my garden, obviously. Although there's trees, so. But once, and I can also see if people are in the garden. I can see them if they're in certain places. And so once I said to someone after, I said, "Oh yeah, I saw you in the garden." And And then she said to me, well, yeah, I saw you too. And I was surprised that she saw me. And she said, think about it. If you can see me, well, I can see you. I was thinking I was in my house behind my window. She couldn't see me. But of course. So I'm sure that up there on that viewpoint, it's possible to see this building. And yet, even going to look on the viewpoints seems to miss something about just being here with what is. Of course, it's a different being up there. And even this notion of up there and down here is creating it. These belong to the relative world, as we know. And it's real, you know, that is a higher elevation. And you walk up that hill and it's very steep. And it's not down here, right? And where I am here is up here compared to something else that's even lower. So there's all these relative things that are going on. And yet, can I just really appreciate what it is right here where I am? Whether I'm up there at the viewpoint or whether I'm right here. Because when I'm up there at the viewpoint, that's just what it is. And if we try to fix that even, you know, so up there at the viewpoint, it's just like everybody has cameras and everybody's taking pictures and asking you to move out of the way so they can get a picture. And there's all these, I don't know when this arrived in Lisbon, but all these like golf cart things that tourists ride in to go up to the top of the viewpoint. People who don't want to walk, obviously. And so everyone is trying to capture it with their cameras. And we know this so well, don't we? How everyone is trying to capture whatever it is with their cameras and they miss what it is, you know? They take pictures of their food in restaurants and they take a picture wherever they are. I'm trying here to take a picture every day as part of my ongoing project. Not so much because it's more like a record of a moment. It's not so much that I'm not seeing what I'm seeing. It's more to record the moment. And probably some of those people up there too is what with their cameras, that's what they're doing. And even on one of those, the highest one, there's a mosaic, a thing made of tiles of the view, of what you can see, indicating what you can see. And so I was looking at it and there were things that weren't in it that I could clearly see. And so then I looked at the date and it was made in 1963. So of course, the skyline has changed immensely. There's even a bridge that wasn't there in 1963. Which is this huge emblematic bridge in Lisbon. And so when we try to record it and fix it, well, it's changing. It's always changing. So if I go there today, it's one thing. If I go there tomorrow, it's another thing. If I go there 1963, it was one thing. Today, it's another thing. The same is true of wherever we are. Every moment. So, I say I gave a Dharma talk yesterday. Well, of course, it's not going to be the same thing today. The same things are true for me. I could like pick up on what I said yesterday, but it's a different moment. Most of the people, or many of the people on the screen, were there yesterday. They heard the Dharma talk. The Dharma talk will be online. Anybody can hear it. So, I'm not going to repeat the Dharma talk, right? I couldn't repeat it because it's a different moment, different place, different time, different people. I couldn't repeat it. And I have no interest in repeating it. So So how do we well, let's say our usual pattern is that we want something other, we want to see something other than what is right here. We want another view. Or we don't. We want only this view. We want to limit it to this view. I was thinking today too, all over I see written on the walls, and this is probably the same thing in Paris and other cities, free Palestine. You never see free Israel. You never see anything, or I haven't seen anything to do with, like, long live Israel or something. I think I understand why that is. At the same time, it seems like it's just one viewpoint. That's maybe it's the people who write on walls or share that viewpoint. The people who don't write on walls have a different viewpoint, or the people who, I don't know, because it's probably a limited population that writes on the walls. I don't know who they are, but well, I can guess, but it is remarkable that that's what is written, Free Palestine, and not anything else. So we have these limited views that we carve in stone. And sometimes we are uncomfortable and we want some other view. We don't like the view we have. Or, I'm curious about that view up there, so I'm not really paying attention to this view. Although I do, I studied this view out this window, these windows, there's two of them here a lot. And then there's a different view on the other side. So there's an orange tree in the street on the other side, right in front of my window. And always a lot of tourists. On the back side here from this window, I can't really see the street, but it doesn't look like tourists are in these houses here. So what is it that makes us want another view? I'm talking to myself too. So why is it that I want another view? Am I curious to expand my view, or am I not really seeing what's here and I want something new? Same thing when we sit, right? Sometimes we get really bored. Or we don't see what's there because we're imagining something else. Or we're caught up in some other train of thought. Usually it's a thought pattern or emotions. So we don't see what's really there. Someone said yesterday, and I know we're not supposed to talk about the circle, so I won't say who said it, but someone said in the circle that, at the beginning of the day, it was a completely different experience looking at the floor than at the end of the day. And we know that, right? The room looks different if we sit there all day. The day was at Krisha's home, and so probably it looked different to her house. It certainly was different for us than it was for her, because she lives there. But the furniture was moved around. People were there who would never have never been there and would never be there otherwise, sitting in a way that they would never sit otherwise, doing something that never happens there. So probably her experience, although it's the same place, was different. And her attention was probably different. I don't know, projecting onto Krisha, but I can imagine having done this because I've done the same thing in my house. Had retreats in my house and moved the furniture around. Having lived in a Zen center, I know. So what is it that moves us to? What is it that helps us to see where we are differently? And what is it that that makes us want to move away from what is here and go see something else. You know, there's this exercise that Geno Roshi used to, or I think it was from her that I got it, I don't remember. But it was to walk down your street, which you know very well, and look at it as if you were seeing it for the first time. Try to step back and see it as if you were seeing it for the first time. And I used to try that. So I would come up out of the metro in my street and try to see that street as if I was someone who had never been there before. I can remember what it was like to come there for the first time. And it's long, long, long ago. But when I do this exercise, it's not really like that. It's more like widening the view or something. Or like those books we've talked about that were fashionable in the 90s. It's like a 3D image that if you looked at it a certain way, you know, if you like disconnected your eyes in a certain way, then you could see the image that was underlying it. But you couldn't, as soon as you kind of fixed it, you lost it. And it was this odd kind of, I don't see people smiling so other people recognize, know these books too. I forget what they were called. If you had to like settle into a kind of letting go of view, almost like change your vision in order to see what was there. So this exercise is kind of like that. Like taking that kind of step back and seeing new. Or if someone new comes to visit, they've never been in your house before. And they look, so we saw Krisha's house differently. Maybe she saw it differently because we were seeing it new. And then how does this apply? In a sense, it feels kind of like that's what my whole experience of taking a month and moving myself out of my usual box is a way of freshening, you know, like hitting refresh on the page or something. Updating, you know, there's a freshness about it when you can step back from your usual point of view, and you don't have to go to another place to see it. That's what I think when I say that I go up high to look down or stay here, I don't have to go to another place to see differently. It's almost like I go to a different place within myself. I don't have to move somewhere else. So I find that refreshing. Someone said to me about the day of practice yesterday that it was that there was a feeling of freshness about it in Sangha, of being together in a different way, in a fresh way or something. And I recognize that. And it has to do with, you know, being in situations that we're not used to being in. So we had never sat at Krisha's house before. I'm usually not here in Lisbon on a Saturday, on a Sunday afternoon, Sunday to sit together. There were new people who we don't see much, or someone who we hadn't seen before. So there's a freshness about it. And yet there is a freshness in every moment if we dispose ourselves to it, if we allow ourselves to experience it. And that has applications, implications in our life. You know, if I expand that onto, you know, how we approach our work, how we approach our family, how we approach our relations with friends, children, parents, how we move in the world. If we can connect with that freshness, then there's a freshness about all of that. It doesn't mean that we can end the war between Israel and Hamas, or the war between Ukraine and Russia, or that we can stop, you know, stop people from shooting each other on the streets in the United States. But it does change our experience of those things. And it does make a difference. It makes a difference in our life, and it makes a difference in the people we interact with, as we always say. So I think I will pause there and open it up if people would like to share a question about this or anything else.
As always, nice to see you all. And I don't know if this is the last time we talked about this, but recently on this Zoom, someone mentioned that it was it felt easier to be on the lookout for freshness when you're young than later. And I certainly agree. And I realized when I was listening to that, that I find in my own case, and right now is really a good example because it's very unbalanced, but there's kind of a tension between wanting to see things anew and really enjoying the routine aspect. And I don't really like routine, but once you get into it, it's kind of in a musty sort of way. It's kind of cozy. You know what it's all about. You don't have to ask too many questions. You kind of stumble through it and I don't know, do what else, think about other things. But at the time when that remark came up, I realized to what an extent in the more active periods of my life, the come on, let's go out and be curious about new things is prevalent. But in an opposite way, when I'm kind of down, the way the weather is right now or something, it's just so much more comforting to not have to have anything new. It's terrible to say, but it's true. I know in my case it's true. I don't want anything new. I just want to kind of sit here and stew in what I know, so I don't take any chances, sort of thing.
Well, I think that is true, because the more we accumulate experiences and references, and the more we experience losses and gains and grief and joys and whatever, then it's as if it's like a piece of furniture that, you know, has been varnished and painted and varnished and painted, and you know, there's layers and layers, or walls that have layers of I remember when we first started working on the house that became the Zen Center, we had to peel off layers of wallpaper. And so it's the same thing with us. You know, we have layers and layers of experiences, and we're also more vulnerable as we grow older to certain, you know, because health-wise we're more vulnerable. Our bodies don't work as well. And this doesn't mean, you know, this can be when we are 35, it's different than when we're 15. You know, it's not necessarily something that has to do with old age or great child, you know, young youth or something. It's as we grow, as we move through life, then we accumulate and we we have positions and things that are familiar. And yet, even the very fact that you can say that is, you know, that is an indication that it's not as fixed as you know, as somebody else might have it be, you know. You see that. You see that, oh, well, I really like this when it's like this. And you know that there's a possibility to not do it. You know that it's possible to not stew and chew on something that, you know, is whatever. I don't know what you mean by stew, but I think I know, you know, I would just prefer to stay with my shit instead of like go out and find something else. I don't know. But even the fact that you can say that, it's an indication that it's not so closed as it might seem. And routine can be, you know, like I said, I've given myself this really intense routine while I'm here. And there's enormous strength and freedom in that too. So within that structure, but I'm used to that kind of thing because both as a Zen practitioner and as a journalist, I always had these really strict structures. And I really enjoy the freedom that the structure brings. So the routine isn't in itself is not a bad thing. And I mean, none of it's bad, but I mean, it's not a limiting thing in itself, a routine. It's when we become fixed at it and we refuse anything else that it becomes. And you accept to go out of your routine sometimes.
Can I say something, or should I raise the hand over
No,
here?
Go ahead. No.
I was just listening to Debbie. And I was thinking that sometimes, you know, we can offer sort of unfamiliarity as an act of kindness to somebody, you know? I'm a therapist, but I'm not just thinking about that. We can do that with a friend in an everyday life. So a friend comes to us, and they're absolutely sure that they know what's upsetting them or what's upsetting them in their relationship or whatever that is, you know, they're absolutely sure. And sometimes you have a sense that they just want to be listened and validated that day and get a gesture or a word of kindness. Other times you have a sense that they're a bit more ready to sort of open the possibility that maybe they don't fully know. There's certain things they don't fully know. And we can offer unfamiliarity. You know, we can ask questions. We can ask them to reflect on things in a different way. We can softly challenge their interpretation of what they think they saw in the other person, if it's a relationship or what they brought, you know, what they're carrying with them or who they think the other person is or who they think they are in that relationship. So we can ask questions that sort of get them to see things in a sort of less familiar way, which then can raise tension and anxiety, but can also bring some relief. But I think sometimes, or I find that in my own experience, I'm fairly good doing that kind of thing, but I don't always offer that to myself. You know, I don't always offer unfamiliarity to myself as a gift, you know? So sometimes I just go around assuming that I know who I am. I know what my life is about. I know what things are, you know? And it's that paradox that we sometimes able to offer other people forms of kindness that are not always accessible or don't feel accessible in terms of offering it to ourselves, you know? So just reflecting on that, how unfamiliarity is a gift that we, yeah, can give, but not always receive. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Me or Debbie?
Both of you. But you first of all, because you're giving the talk, so you first.
Yeah, I definitely can be an act of kindness, opening doors. And it's true, it's often the most difficult with ourselves. whether it's kindness, whether it's compassion, whether it's love, whether it's giving ourselves a hug, as we would say, that's often the hardest thing to do. And it's interesting to look at that. Why is that so hard?
Yeah, why? Why do you think that it's so hard?
Well, it has to do with our having this really strong attachment to who I am, my identity. And partially not wanting to be vulnerable, because sometimes we say, you know, we talk about the two selves, and we say that the little self that we've created in this identity that we're so attached to is terrified that it doesn't exist. It knows that it doesn't, because it doesn't exist. It's a fiction, you know. But at the same time, on some level, it knows that, but it's terrified of it. And so it will reject anything that might challenge that, anything that might hint at vulnerability, because we have to keep it strong and, together. And any sign that of vulnerability, like, you know, giving kindness to ourselves, because it's acknowledging that we're vulnerable and we need kindness, or being compassionate for oneself, then you have to admit to yourself, you have to open up to the reality that you do suffer and that you are feeling pain. And it's hard. I know that when I was much younger and I was very different. I mean, it was the same person, but very different makeup. You know, I was doing other things. And I had a really hard time saying goodbye. So separation issues and whatever. But so what I would do is, like, I just didn't say goodbye. I just would leave, you know, like in a group of people or something. I didn't go around and say goodbye to everybody. Even with my family, you know, in America, who I only saw like once a year, I would somehow manage to not really have to say goodbye. And the reason was, I realized much later, was because I didn't want to feel the pain of that saying goodbye and that separation. And I could not possibly have had compassion for myself with that inability to face it. Just impossible. As soon as I recognize, and so the same thing applies, if I recognize someone else's suffering, then I have to recognize my own. So also it went hand in hand with not wanting to see anybody suffer. And then coming across as being somebody who was really cold and aloof and arrogant and superior, which I totally came off as arrogant. I'm sure, you know, people thought I was really, really arrogant. And I was, but not for the reasons that when we see someone who's arrogant, we don't know really why it is, but that's what it is.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's wrong.
Hello, good evening, everyone. So talking about seeing things as new. This afternoon when I left school, I got the bus, and then I was waiting for the metro to go somewhere else, pick up some trousers that were being mended. And there was this woman with a little girl, really small. She was really small. She could already walk, but she was really small. And so on the platform, waiting for the metro, the surface metro, there are these stalls with sort of stalls with, I don't know the name, with advertisement, publicity, one side and the other. So I was on I was on the other side, which was not so crowded, and So this little girl arrives with the mother, and she was looking. She was still coming, and she was fixed on this something that was on the other side, which I couldn't see at the moment. And then her mother would say something, and she would look away. She would look at her, and then after a couple of seconds, she would look again. And initially, I was just really observing this. Her eyes are being like attracted to this, and I got really curious. What's caught her attention so much? So like discreetly, I moved a few steps so I could see what was there. This was just it was not even to a particular product or anything. It was it's from a big chain, supermarket chain we have here in Portugal, and there is this figure that it's actually a pig. It's like a female pig with a skirt, and it's like it usually comes up like in Christmas time. It was just that, just an advertisement for that big chain of supermarkets, and there was this pig with the little toys and very colorful. And so and then I kept seeing her. She was really, she was really she, that she was really interested. And so I tried to, having kids, I know how it is. They're 17, but they were smaller once. And so, yeah, they, you know, this, they always keep you on your toes, kids, because there's always, now and again, there's always something that you're not expecting, and there is this freshness in thought, there is this freshness in curiosity. And so I was trying to look at that poster, with the little kid, with the little girl's eyes, yeah, because it's colorful. Very colorful, red, like the background was all red. There was a lot of yellow. There were all these smiling, like toys, human-like or animal-like. So, yeah, it was like she was teaching me. She was my teacher, and she was, look at this. It's so beautiful. It's really funny. So I was very grateful to her to allow me to try to look at that with curiosity. With curiosity. And it was just a poster, like an advertisement poster. So, yeah, it was an interesting experience.
Krisha.
Good evening, everyone. I'm really tired just listening. And doesn't come up anything to say, but now it came. Today I went to a new site, construction site in the middle of nowhere in Mafra. And Mafra, it's really near Lisbon. It's about 40 minutes. It was 39 minutes in my GPS. And today was a sunny day, or the fog dissipated really quick in the morning because I went in the morning, not an early morning, but I went about 9, and it was blue sky with sunny. And I was really glad, really tired, but I loved the. We call it Zona Saloia, It's the countryside by Lisbon, and it's a photovoltaic construction. It's completely at the beginning, and you just see green, 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 ships, all the mills, the stuff that does the bread and goes with the wind. And I was, you know, enchanted and inspired by nature, I don't know. And then I was, it came a little insight, because I'm really completely almost sleeping, because I understand what Roshi is talking about, the view, the peaks, but I don't know why. And I said, but I have the same thing. I don't have a clue why. And then I think, I'm not connected to that because I'm too sleepy. But what came to me now, remember my morning today, it's you connect with a view when it's memorizing and beautiful, it comes to you, it fills you with something good, a sensation of beautiful, wow, noticing the presence of, in my case, the great outdoors, the lovely light, and it puts it. I'm sorry, I don't remember the word.
You can say it in Portuguese. Someone will translate.
Okay. Tinto dia to cheio de cansaço.
Diz o quê? Atenta ao dia, disseste?
Não, tinta.
Ah, ink. Like to paint, ink, or paint.
Your day in a different color.
Paint, yeah.
It's a mood. It's a mood transference.
Colors your day in a different, sort of with a different color. It brings a different color to your day. But that's sort of image, yeah.
Yeah. And I think the peaks and the views and I love Mirador da Graça, where you are. The tourists really annoy me because it's really recent. It's really recent. You know, it has something about 3-5 years, and we got COVID, and we are not used to. But it's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, this idea of coloring our day differently. And every day is different. Every moment is different. Can be colored differently and is colored differently. You know, some of the greatest paintings we have from Cézanne and Monet are of always painting the same thing, whether it's haystacks or water lilies or the Montagne Saint-Victoire for Cézanne. It's always the same thing. And yet it's completely different every time. I'll also share a new moment I had in the last week. I took the metro every morning. And one morning there was a group of elderly people coming in, all around, I'd say 70 or so, gray hair, and they had suitcases with them, so they obviously were going to a train station or something, and I just overheard them wonder where they were going now and if they were in the right place and looking for a map. And so I asked them if I can help where they wanted to go, because we were going up north, and I thought, well, if they want to go somewhere, it probably will not be the right metro. And so they told me that they wanted to go to Gare Montparnasse. And so I said to them, oh yeah, it's well, now you're going north, it's not the right direction. And I was really surprised because yeah, that's also an idea, but they were French, and normally I would expect French people to be a little bit in a, oh no, we just took the wrong direction, and oh, and they were just having fun and laughing about their mistake, you know. Oh really? So oh, so what do you have to do? And say, so, yeah, you just go to the other side and go down. And I asked them when their train was, and they said in at 10:15 or so, and it was 9 o'clock. So I said, oh, you still have time to make some mistakes in finding the right metro. And it was really a nice moment together, you know. And I thought, oh wow, that was so special, you know, that they were in such a good mood. And even when they stepped out the metro, so they thanked me and smiled, and they got off, and even then all of them were still looking. I was looking at them, and so they, it was just like friends were leaving us. It was very unusual. So yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, every moment is an endless surprise, you know. I know we have an idea about how people will behave, and it might be also how we would behave if we were supposed to get a train and we were in a foreign city or a city we don't know and we took the wrong way. So, no, why did I do that or something? But so refreshing, huh? So,
Yeah, it's so. Yeah, I really didn't expect that. I mean, I saw that they were really nice people, and that, but yeah, they had so much fun in just, oh, we took the wrong, so we got in the wrong direction, and not caring at all. I mean, they had time to go there, so, but yeah, it was still, it wasn't what I expected. So yeah, it was very surprising to me that they had so much fun with their heading in the wrong direction.
well, and that you were open to that, that you then said, oh, you have plenty of time to make other mistakes. You better hurry. How could you have made that mistake? You know, or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
There was this American painter. He was called Bob Ross, who had a famous TV show in the US for some seasons, The Joy of Painting. And he would not actually come up with the painting on the show. Actually, he kind of thought about it before, and then but he did it. He did a new painting, a fresh painting, during the show. And sometimes he would, something would, it hadn't exactly, he didn't exactly want it to do that, but he did it. So the stroke went on the canvas. But this is kind of famous because what he always said was, you know, there are no mistakes. And then that would take the picture a bit in some other direction. And he would always say that there are no mistakes. There are just not only accidents, but happy accidents. So he would, you know, he would accept that. It would take the picture in a slightly different path. He incorporated it. Okay, go with it. And then actually sometimes like it turned, there was this wrong stroke of the brush with the brush. And then he would make like that into a tree, for instance, that he wasn't planning to do there. And then actually, then he would do another one. So something new would come from that. So he always called that, he said it many times. There are no mistakes, just happy accidents. So, yeah.
Good evening, everyone. I just want to add, I don't know if any of you have dogs, but I think about that freshness of looks. I have the best teacher every day, my little dog, because every new day and every new walk is the first one. He's always happy and smelling new things, even though we do the same walk before I go to work because I have to be quick. And the way he greets people, even though are the neighbors that he knows very well, but everything is new for him, like, but not new, but that innocence that we can find in children also, that you were talking about, João. It's a great teacher every day. I'm always happy. Thank you.
Yeah, good example, because animals and kids are great for that. Cats too, huh? You know, even though cats can be kind of blasé, but sometimes, you know, they'll be completely interested in a fly, you know, or a piece of string or something, which is what's interesting about a piece of string, you know, but they, yeah, it's great. And sometimes we say, oh, they keep us young, but it's not so much young, I think. It's keep us fresh and open, maybe. Like maybe you see your walk differently too, Carla, because he's seeing it different. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe they don't have any expectations. Maybe that's the secret. Yeah.
Yeah, as we say, you know, as Suzuki said, in the beginner's mind, nothing is possible. In the expert's mind, nothing is possible. In the beginner's mind, everything is possible.
Yeah.
As we get older and more experienced, we have lots of expertise about this moment, and then nothing is possible. Mm-hmm. So maybe we'll end on that. Our time is up. Thank you.